From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys for this week. You got myself, Stuart, here in Melbourne, Australia. Nice and sunny Melbourne, Australia today, but not very warm. Doesn't matter. Middle of winter will do that to you. However, to my left is Mr. Hunt Dusing in Dallas, Texas.
Alfred sick.
Yeah. You gotta wear a turtleneck with that, Hunter, when you say that. And you gotta look real, like, down and concerned.
I was bobbing my head around earlier like George Clooney, you know, like, before he, before Steven Soderbergh, like, pumped him full of tranquilizers, you know, he would always hey, I'm George Clooney, how's it going?
Yeah. That's right. He's gotta get ready for all that hamming it up he does in Coen Brothers movies.
Yeah, you know, he did does that. Big facial expression.
I saw a thing with Jesse Waters years ago when he was at a film premiere, and he went up to George Clooney and he goes, something about Obama. He said something Obama, and Clooney looks at him and goes, President Obama. I thought, you didn't say that about the Donald, do you?
Tactical respect, Stu. Yes. I'm going to make people I don't like respect people they don't like.
That's right.
Yes. You know, and you're rude if you don't do it. Yeah. But I don't have to do it because I don't have standards, okay? But you do. So you need to do as I say.
Yeah. It's just funny. He just stared at him and goes, President Obama. I thought, oh, wank.
Yeah. And was he eating something at the time? Like, was he like, yeah, President Obama.
No, he wasn't. He was actually had his wife with him, so.
His beard?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, wife.
No, don't think so. Oh, his beard. Oh, right. Yeah. I think, did he have a beard? Oh, yes. The Iranian beard. Yeah, she was there.
So this was around the time when he was making Syriana, when he was doing his anti-Bush, no blood for oil movies, like Syriana. Remember he had that big old beard?
Yeah, that really big beard for Syriana. I remember that.
I never saw the movie, but I just would see screenshots of him walking around with this big beard and cars blowing up behind him and stuff.
Yeah, of course, because, you know, that looks cool, man, in the trailer. Speaking of cool, down below, Mr. John Grace, casually knocking back some, what is it called?
Seltzer water.
Seltzer water.
So it's called Waterloo.
It's Mickey's Big Mouth. Right,
which sounds really bad at some parts. Yeah.
Is that ABBA's drink, like Kiss beer? ABBA's Waterloo.
You should see those Swedes on here. That would actually be a good decoration. They might sell better.
You might have you used to have a Bjorn beard, remember? Years ago, there was a picture of you. It's a picture of you put up. It was like you were out in the field or something. You had this massive.
I've grown some beards in my time, looking like Charles Manson or a biker or something. Yeah.
Holy hell, that one was fucking brutal, that beard.
An alt country singer, you know.
Oh, I'm glad you said country. Okay. So anyway, the film we're talking about this week is the Chuck Norris, Aaron Norris directed Sidekicks, picked by Mr. Dusing over there. And we'll get into that. And the very unfortunate Jonathan Brandis, press F.
Yeah.
Read up on him just before we recorded. Oh boy, another Hollywood casualty, poor thing.
Yep.
But anyway, before that, we're gonna whip out our junk. So who wants to go first? I got a bit again.
I'll go first.
All right,
starting it off, you know, anytime we get some Michael Cimino, Mickey Rourke, and High Def.
Oh, wow. Shit. I need that one.
This is, and it's MVD. I like, you know, they got the slipcase, reversible cover.
That's the same cover as my soundtrack CD I've got. That nice. One there. Yeah.
I've never seen this movie, but I saw it at the store and I went, I'm getting that.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No.
Oh.
It's Mickey Rourke really chewing the scenery. In that calm Mickey Rourke way with that soft voice.
I know. Yeah. Hang on. Hunter, I know you're not back next week. You're gone. Yeah. How about the week after we do Desperate Hours?
Yeah.
I'd like to revisit that one. Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm all about it.
The film that ran for 1 week in Melbourne. 1 week and it was gone. And I caught it.
It ran for 1 week in the U.S.
Did it really? It was, okay.
Yeah.
It bombed.
Cimino's last couple of movies just, you know.
Dumped.
Yeah. Like Desperate Hours, Sun Chaser. Like, who remembers Sun Chaser? You know?
No Brief one.
No.
Nobody. Okay, so this was a Prime Day get. I got this for cheap. And this was a Blu-ray upgrade for some. And for some movies, there's some movies on here I've never seen. And I got this Steven Spielberg director box set.
Mm-hmm.
And it has Duel, which I had on DVD. Sugarland Express, which I've never seen. Got Jaws, which I had on DVD. So now I have it on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
1941, which, who cares? E.T., which, you know, still haven't seen it since I was a kid. I need to watch it again. Always, which I've never seen. Probably for the best, but I'll check it out. I'll watch it. Jurassic Park, which I didn't have on Blu-ray, and Lost World, which I like, you know, which is a movie I enjoy.
No, you did all right.
Yeah, but it was like $10. So
jeez, that's
yeah,
cheap.
Yeah, it was really cheap. So I went, well, that's a no-brainer. Like, I can upgrade some, get some movies I've never seen, you know. So it was pretty cool, and it's got this like kind of book that comes out, and it's got the different movies, you know, with the different posters. And
does
that
have both cuts of Duel on it, or just the one?
Let's see. It doesn't. It says it has two cuts of 1941, but it says bonus features. I don't see anything about separate cuts.
Okay.
So it might just have the one.
Doesn't really matter anyway.
But it does have two versions of 1941, which that movie is too long in either version, I'm sure. And all right. And so I hit up the Barnes and Noble Criterion sale. And this first one here, this is one that one of my very favorite monster movies, Island of Lost Souls. Probably still the best Island of Dr. Moreau adaptation.
1932. Okay.
And it's you know, it's pre-code. It's got the great, you know, Charles Lawton and Bela Lugosi. It's just a fantastic film.
Yeah.
All right. And the next one I got, this is a movie. It's not a movie I am like, oh boy, let's watch this film. But I figured now I'll pick it up because why not? I got their Raging Bull. They just put out.
Who's that Criterion, Blu-ray. Is it?
Yeah, Blu-ray and 4K.
Oh, wow. 4K. Yeah. Would look nice.
Yeah. You know, and I was like, you know, I haven't seen this one in a while. It's not a movie. Nobody's ever like, hey, guys, let's watch Raging Bull. It's a pretty rough watch. But, I mean, it's a good movie, but it's Robert De Niro's character is just so unpleasant.
Yeah.
He's just so awful.
I remember when I was a kid watching the real Jake LaMotta argue with Vicky LaMotta on ESPN. And Jake LaMotta was just this old man, it's fat, and he was just like, yeah, what you talking about? Yeah. You're doing all the New Yorkies. And then Vicky was still looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was in her 50s and had done a Playboy layout or something. And she was just laughing at him, but it was really strange to watch. It was bizarre. It's more interesting than I think what's in that movie with, you know, actors playing them.
Yeah. You know, the real life is always more interesting.
Yeah. I mean, like, supposedly Jake LaMotta was the best man at Sugar Ray Robinson's wedding.
You never got me down, Ray.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, this whole rivalry thing didn't actually exist outside of the ring.
Yeah. It's all drama. You know, it's for the movie.
Yeah.
you know, they invent a lot of stuff. It's kind of like, you know, the movie Rudy. They made the coach the bad guy, like, which was such BS. The coach was like his biggest champion. But they were like, hey, we're going to make you the bad guy in the movie. And he was like, good, whatever makes Rudy look good.
There was a really good boxing movie that came out in the mid-90s with John Favreau, but I can't remember the name of it.
Rocky Marciano.
He played Rocky Marciano.
That's the one. Yeah, yeah. That was a good film.
Okay.
I liked it.
I remember the DVDs always made it look like Rocky, but it was Rocky Marciano. It was Marciano.
That's like a rule, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for me.
Okay. All right, John. John, right, what you got?
Well, I picked up a... was at the library sale last week over in Centennial, and I picked up a CD by my good friend Ott Mooney, which is going to be reversed on the video. It's pretty square, very square, you know, old school American songbook music, as I've listened to. This is apparently what the Ramones saved us from, but I think in this case it was what Glenn Miller saved us from and Benny Goodman, because it's like... I'm looking over a four-leaf clover. It's that type of music. So, but Art Mooney was real. That's what I found out. Like, Ford Fairlane didn't make him up. And,
really? Okay. Art Mooney. Yeah.
Art Mooney, my good friend. That was his real star on the Walk of Fame that's featured in the films. So I guess he was a big deal in the 40s and early 50s. But this was an amazing score. I got a deep discount. This is a Decca box set of Tom Jones. All of his Decca albums. I mean, it's like, good Lord. I think it's like 11 CD. No, I'm sorry. It's like 13 or 14 CDs in here. It's all of his albums. It was $25 at deep discount. Might still be available.
That's cheap.
When this video and drops.
Every single song.
This is the first couple of CDs. Great sound. Unbelievable.
Every single song on every single CD is just the chorus of What's New Pussycat on a loop.
Well, not quite. Jimmy Page plays guitar on a lot of this stuff because he was a big session guy. Yeah. So
what you're saying,
history.
What you're saying is that this is actually a secret CD box set of OTO Crowley Rituals.
Yeah, there's Crowley Rituals with I think they had Tom Jones at the Loch Ness Mansion with the
Tom Jones is like in
the frilly shirts. Yeah.
Like the Death Wish 2 soundtrack.
Every time they did a spell to Satan, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Old ladies throwing their panties at him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard those stories about, like, at his shows, like, elderly women throwing their bras and stuff at.
Oh, it's crazy. He was, remember, he took Elvira's virginity.
Yeah.
Suppose
she
claims
that she had to go to the hospital.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she had to go to the hospital after that because he was, yeah.
Because he was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And, you know, went right into her and
he said, what's new, Elvira?
It was available then.
I'm gonna destroy that pussycat. Whoa. Alright. Gosh. Anything else, John?
Well, I've got the predicted Eureka order because I figured I had a few gaps. By the way, Skinny Tiger and Fatty Dragon is out of print. It's now going for dumb money on eBay. And that came out in January. Just shows you how limited the market is on this stuff. But I got Odd Couple, which has nothing to do with, you know, Felix and
Felix, you know, and Oscar. Yeah,
it's Sammo Hung and Lau Kar Jung. I think we now call him Leo Jia Young, Lau Kar Lung's brother. It's pretty good film.
Is that an 88 Films?
This is Eureka.
Oh, okay, okay.
It was kind of weird to see Eureka release something like Odd Couple, which is like a kung fu comedy, not really respectable. It's, you know, but it's a fun movie, but it's not like, you know, they seem to be putting out, hey, the top Golden Harvest movies, but here's an independent film they put out, you know. Let's see, Shaolin Plot, which is a fantastic early Golden Harvest release with James Chen, Sammo Hung, and Chen Sing, and also a great debut for Casanova Wong, the Korean super kicker. And Millionaire's Express, the Sammo Hung. Apparently, they have like four different cuts of this film on here or some nonsense like that. Yeah, because, you know, Golden Harvest was like, they were like the kings of the multiple cuts for different markets. So you'd have a cut for English export. You have a cut for Chinese export. You have a cut for Taiwan. You have a cut for Hong Kong. and there would be different jokes, different footage. It's, you can't even assemble like a true hybrid cut, because sometimes the takes, there's alternate takes that contradict what they shot for one version and another. You know how they have like a dozen versions of Police Story, the Jackie Chan film?
Yes. Yes.
And it's real aggravating. And the truth is, I prefer the English export cut that's the shortest, because I think the Hong Kong cut is bloated and way too much comedy and too much of Jackie Chan winking at the camera and stuff.
You know, I watched Mr. Nice Guy for the first time. And I remember watching it going, the opening for this movie is so like grotesque and dark. And then I read the American version. They opened it with a much lighter thing because they were like, this is a really stupid way to open this movie.
Yeah, I think the American cuts are superior on some of those Chan movies. Not all of them, but I agree. Some, I think the American cuts are better.
Yeah, Mr. Nice Guy is the one in Australia, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Melbourne, I think.
Melbourne.
Yeah, it's in your neck of the woods.
Bastard, I remember that day. I remember that effing day. I was going to go to the JB Hi-Fi on Elizabeth Street, which is the right in the heart of the city there. And, couldn't get there. All the streets are locked off because they were filming this stupid freaking movie. Like, I want to go in and buy, I can't remember what it was I was after or something or another, but I just want to go to JB. Oh, sorry, we're filming Jackie Chan. Oh, fuck Jackie Chan. Who cares?
Well, did they release Kiss Meets Phantom of the Park on VHS and you had to get over
don't
there?
Don't you think I would have had it by then? They had Lord knows what. It was something on it. But yeah, they blocked off Elizabeth and Lonsdale. They intersect with each other. I thought, bugger off. I just want to go. Mr. Nice Guy, I've told the story before as well. It was when they were filming in Carlton, which is the next suburb up from the Central Business District. And where I was working at the time, there was a whole bunch of us guys. We were about the same age, you know, a few years apart. But I was on the road doing my round for work. I had another guy with me, this guy named Boris. And a friend of ours, Rudy, was a massive Jackie Chan fan. Like, massive. And we said, we went out, me and Boris went out, came back out. He said, holy shit, Rudy, they're filming the Jackie Chan film up at Carlton, and we got to meet him. We got his autograph for you. He's like, oh, he's fucking geeking right out. But me and Boris actually just written, to Rudy with love, Jackie Chan in the car. Poor bastard. He always thought, he thinks to this day he's got Jackie Chan's autograph, but it was actually us who did it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I hope he doesn't watch a show. That's
going to be. No. I don't know where Rudy is this day, but yeah, he was.
It's going to be like those pranks George Clooney would pull, and then people wouldn't find out till they saw him explain it on like Jay Leno or something.
It was funny. He's sitting in the office ringing his brother up. Oh, he's got Jackie Chan's autograph. I thought, oh, should I tell him? I feel bad, but no, I never did. So screw it.
You know, just let it's a beautiful
let sleeping dogs lie. Yeah.
Let it ride.
Yeah. No. Oh, never mind. That's the only funny thing I take away from that film. Because I did see it theatrically, and my God, it was a mess. So bad.
I thought it was all right. Like, I love that they cast, like, square-jawed Chad B. Mossies as the bad guys. It made it feel like a Saturday morning cartoon.
And that redhead one, he's the same. He's rolled up in so many things like that. You think, is this thing, you're a one-trick pony, man. You play the same character.
Yeah.
The still-faced wannabe.
But Jackie, the work of his quality was declining by that point. But anyway.
Yeah, I talk, like I said.
Yeah, after 89, you're rolling dice with a Jackie Chan movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's difficult to watch all the streets not matching, going, this doesn't lead here.
Oh,
this doesn't lead. I hate that.
It's like living in San Francisco and watching Bullet. It's like, what's happening?
Yeah. Or LA and watching Lethal Weapon, where Mel Gibson catches up with a car on foot, like 3 miles somewhere else in LA, you know.
Yeah.
It, that's true of any place where you live, and then you.
It's movie world. It's like.
Yeah. Hey, anything else, John?
No, that's it.
That's it. All right. I'll rip through mine real quick. Okay. Prime Day sale for me. I only got one thing, but. This was discounted by $60. The Batman 18 film collection, 80th anniversary.
So
the animated films. Animated.
Oh, so it's the animated films.
The animated films. Yeah.
Cool.
Already got the original Batman, obviously the 66, the 89, 92, and what's his
Alfred
name? Disasters.
Sick.
Yeah, that one. The Schumacher Disasters.
Somebody
the
was
Alfred
referencing that in the group, John saying Alfred Sick. And
Alfred Sick.
Cracked me up.
It's yeah.
God
so there's
that.
That was a nice price. Okay. A few CDs get finished real quick.
Ooh.
Wild at Heart soundtrack picked up for $4.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not bad. This one, Bloodhound Gang, Hefty Fine was $1 or $2.
What? If you had said, like, what is Stu going to have on today? Bloodhound Gang's Hefty Fine. Not Hooray for Boobies or One Fierce Beer Coaster. Hefty Fine.
I already own One Fierce Beer Coaster, but I also picked up Hooray for Boobies.
Yeah. See, that's where they peaked, Bloodhound Gang.
Yeah.
Was that one.
That was $1, that one. Bloodhound Gang, Use Your Fingers. That was $1 or $2. Yep. And
did
last
you, did you get did you get their other ones too? Like
I couldn't find it. Couldn't find it. All right.
I gotta say though, their lead singer on Twitter is really funny.
Jimmy Pop, he's funny,
like,
as hell.
His
yeah.
Twitter account is really funny. Like, he doesn't tweet very much, but when he does, like, it's laugh out loud. Like,
they've always been a funny band, Bloodhound Gang.
Yeah, they're a comedy hip-hop metal band. You couldn't, I mean, their stuff, though, I mean, they just can't exist today. They don't
No.
Because, you know, like, you go back and listen to a lot of those songs, and it's like, my gosh, like, how did they
Hunter, get the Blazing Saddles of rock and roll?
Oh, yeah. You know, I couldn't do it today.
Couldn't do it. Couldn't make it today. Couldn't record
couldn't
that
make
today.
It today.
Couldn't do
but,
it.
Got to ask, could you even make Sidekicks today with some of the dialogue in that film?
Joe Piscopo would be, like, you know, murdered. Like, executed.
Yeah.
You know?
We'll get to that
he'd
shortly.
Be murdered anyway.
Yeah. I mean, he's already not funny, you know.
Right. Yeah. All right. Moving on. I got AFI, Very Proud of You. I like AFI.
Oh.
Cool band. That was only $2.
Fire Inside.
Yeah. Now for some vinyl I picked up from this guy a few days back. First one. This is very nice. Wings Over America. Three disc set.
Cool.
Complete with insert and poster as well.
Hmm.
That was nice. This one's a good one. John, you might like this one. This was marked as 10, but only got it for 8. Rowan and Martin's Laughing.
Oh,
I love me some Laughing.
Talk it to me.
Yeah, exactly. Man, you remember how good looking Goldie Hawn was when you watch her in Laughing. Holy shit.
It's true.
Holy shit. That's that. Except for when I went to see the guy at his house, met him out the front, and he had a box of vinyls out the front with a sign, free, help yourself, take them. No, I'm not kidding. And I said to the guy before he went inside, he goes, hey, still got to go. I said, what are these free for? He goes, I can't sell them. He goes, they're all crap. I said, he goes, it's basically 50 and 60 stuff, but help yourself, take what you want. I disagree. Crap? Jimmy Dean's Greatest Hits? No, thanks. No. I disagree. I also disagree, Pally, that this ain't shit either. Dean Martin's Greatest Hits Volume 1.
Wow.
Nor is Dean Martin's Greatest Hits Volume 2.
What?
He just gave him away.
Maybe he's just mad he couldn't play him in his car.
Could be.
Yeah, is this guy Eddie Trunk?
Eddie Trunk's dad. He was a bit older than Eddie Trunk. Mm. But yeah, basically did not want him and said, I thought, what if it rains? We are in the middle of winter, but no, that's his problem, not mine. I just snagged good shit before the heavens opened up. But yeah, they I mean, they need a bit of a clean, which is no problem. Need an inner sleeve, outer sleeve. I've got all that. Fix them up, all good for free. And if they end up sucking and they're unplayable, well, the thrift store gets them. So
yeah,
financially, no big loss for me. But that's it.
All right.
So okay. Let's get on to 1992 Sidekicks. Hunter, this is your choice. Let's go. Why?
So I chose this because I haven't seen it since I was a kid. And I remember seeing this movie when it came out in 1992. And this, so I was about, it says it came out December 17th, it came out April 9th, 1993. So I was 8 years old when this came out. And this movie was heavily marketed to me. You know, like I remember this was the first time I became aware of Chuck Norris. So this was my first Chuck Norris movie. It's probably my first time seeing a movie starring a real martial arts movie star. I remember it just being so excited to see it. And I remember being, you know, I often say like Batman and Robin was the first time I remember being disappointed in a movie. That's not true. It's this movie.
Had you seen The Karate Kid before you saw this?
No, I had not. This movie is a marriage of The Karate Kid and All Monsters Attack. It's more The Karate Kid. But it's Karate Kid, okay? And yeah. Like Karate Kid, it has the same problem. And that's that the main kid is, he sucks, you know, like Daniel LaRusso sucked. And what's his name? Barry Grabowski sucks too. No disrespect to Jonathan Brandis.
No wonder he hung himself for reviews like this.
No. Yeah. Right. Bastard. I just remember, okay. His character in this movie was crafted to make kids like me go, oh, I identify with him.
Right.
Kids like me did not want a protagonist where we went, boy, he's pathetic, just like me. You know?
Yeah, he has no redeeming qualities. There's not.
No, there's nothing. There's nothing about him that makes you want to root for him. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, he just constantly embarrasses himself, and in ways that are not like, he embarrasses himself because he's a lolcow, you know, he, you know, has these fantasies about Chuck Norris in the middle of class. Mm. You know, it's stuff that, you know, when I was a kid, I was often in meetings with my parents, you know, where they, and my teachers, where they were like, he just doesn't pay attention. You know, he's changing channels. You know, I remember stuff like that. And in fact, I remember all my teachers growing up had haircuts like Julia Nixon in this movie. They all had that haircut.
Mm-hmm.
Incidentally, this movie was also shot in Texas, in Houston, you know, so there's something very middle America in 1992 about it that when I watch it now, it's hugely nostalgic. I go, oh, all kids looked like this. Mm-hmm. Everything looked like that. It was really intense watching it this time, because I was like, I remember when everybody looked like that. You know, it was one of those times where you go, you watch a movie and you think, oh, you know, the world has changed a lot. I remember when the world looked like this. Yeah, John.
I had the same vibe when I watched Halloween a few months ago. Mm.
Oh, interesting.
Carpenter's Halloween. Because I was around, I was a kid in 1978, 79, when, mm-hmm. you know, when, or 77 when it was filmed. And that's the way we drew, like the scenes of Michael stalking Laurie at the high school, and also the scenes of the kids like in their elementary school or junior high or whatever they were. I was like, that's what schools look like. That's how kids dress. They all had all had those terrible haircuts. It's mm-hmm. just like the clothes, everything. It's just, it's weird.
Like, yeah. Jonathan Brandis,
everything.
Like so many kids had hair like Brandis in this movie.
Yeah.
Tiger Beat hairdos.
Yeah, and the bullies and stuff, like it was just all, you know, he has the same hair as Jonathan Taylor Thomas, JTT. Yes. Mm. You know, but the thing is like his character just, there's nothing about him that makes you go, I really want to root for him. I'm really invested in him going from zero to hero. And it's this Daniel LaRusso has the same problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. LaRusso is a weak
oh
character.
Yeah. LaRusso is worse. In fact, I think, you know, he's more repulsive than Brandis. Brandis is just kind of pathetic. But yeah. LaRusso is like, he's repulsive.
He's a pathological liar in the Karate Kid.
Yeah, he's just bad. And something too, like you said, pathological liar, John. You know, we've kind of talked previously on the show that we don't like it when, you know, you have a movie where your hero has to like trick people or lie or do kind of sneaky stuff to win. And this movie has some of that. And I noticed that I was thinking about that. That a lot of stuff in the early 90s would kind of do this sort of Eastern, it's better to like trick your opponent and lie to them and make them screw up than to actually fight them because violence is bad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's better to be a con artist and deceptive. Deception
is
better than
and,
violence.
You know, that is something you see in a lot of Eastern philosophy. That's probably, you know, but it's not what we would consider honorable behavior.
Right.
And I noticed there was some of that in here and I was going, gosh, you know, I remember reading stuff that would say that around this time. Here's how to deal with bullies. You trick them. You know, since you're weaker than you have to, like, here's a story about a samurai who took a braggart to an island to duel and then left him there. You know?
Right, right. The Bruce Lee fighting without fighting, put the New Zealander in the boat and trick him and cast him off, you know. Better to have the wisdom of Solomon than the strength of Samson, right?
Yes, 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 exactly. That's a good way of putting it. And there's a little bit of that attitude in this movie, I feel like, especially with Mako's character, who plays the Mr. Miyagi role.
So when you saw this film, did you ever have any desire to join a karate team called Frying Dragon?
Frying Dragon. Yeah, there's some pretty like racist jokes in this movie. Like when you meet Joe Piscopo, who's like the Cobra Kai gym leader, you know, and then he has these, in the film, Brandis has these fantasies that he is Chuck Norris's sidekick. And the fantasies often center around a Chuck Norris movie. Like the movie opens with one from like the Octagon, you know, and then there'll be one in Vietnam with Missing in Action. And Joe Piscopo is playing like the James Hong role. And he's got the Fu Manchu.
Yeah.
And he's speaking with the fake English accent, you know.
That made me think, has anybody ever come after Joe Piscopo and said, back in Sidekicks, you culturally appropriated? I'm surprised no one's done it yet.
I think if this movie were Karate Kid big, they might have.
Yeah,
it wasn't. He'd probably just tell him the fuck off anyway. He wouldn't.
Well, nobody likes Joe Piscopo already, so it's kind of like, why cancel somebody who's just canceled for being not funny? You know?
Why is he so disliked?
I don't know anybody who likes Joe Piscopo. Like when you bring him up, it's always like, Joe Piscopo. You know, I just think he's considered an unfunny comedian.
I thought he was quite good.
He was on SNL, right?
Yeah,
during the Eddie Murphy years.
Hmm.
I remember seeing him.
So like, he was in SNL 80. And the entire cast was fired except for him and Eddie Murphy when Dick Ebersol came in and took over and kind of saved the show.
Yeah.
And he was somewhat popular on SNL. And some people think it was just because of his name. His name was automatically funny. Piscopo. I mean, it's a
Piscopo,
hilarious name. He did a decent Frank Sinatra impression. And he had some dialogue in Johnny Dangerously. You know?
Johnny Dangerously was a film I was going to bring up. I thought he was quite funny in that. Yeah.
And he was also in Dead Heat, the zombie buddy cop movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which has an acting performance from Shane Black as a cop.
Oh, wow. I didn't know he was in that.
Yeah. And it's directed by the editor of The Terminator and Rambo First Blood Part 2, Mark Goldblatt.
Mark Goldblatt.
Then did the Dolph Lundgren Punisher movie. So.
Yes, that's right. He did do the Dolph. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, Joe Piscopo did something way more culturally inappropriate a few years before this. He did a, I think it was a Miller Lite ad where he was done up as Bruce Lee. And he has he has a wig that looks like the Betty haircut. And he was muscular, like he'd been lifting weights, and he made the cover of
Muscle and Fitness.
Yeah, he's bulked up. And he did a big fight scene with all the LA inside Kung Fu guys, like Al Leong, I think, is in the ad, and Douglas Wong, and a bunch of other guys. And he's beating up all these familiar faces you'll recognize from every LA lensed martial arts movie. And he was doing the Bruce Lee accent and, oh, a Miller Lite, you know, like that. And the ads ran for a couple of months. They were very popular, but I would not be surprised if they were pulled because some Asian American group just said, no, this is too much.
So this was not, Sidekicks was not Joe Piscopo's first hate crime against the Asian American.
Right. I'll send you guys a link when we're done with the show. I'll find it. It's on YouTube. Doug Wong, I'm Facebook friends with Douglas Wong.
Oh, of course you are.
He always puts up these, those ads and photos from the shoot and everything. And I think he trained Joe Piscopo in martial arts to do the ad, like to do the screen fighting and stuff, because Joe's doing some moves.
you know who also... I was just going to say, you know who also did something similar around this time? I didn't know this because I hadn't seen this movie, but Low Res was having a ball sharing screen scraps from it. That's John Leguizamo in The Pest.
Oh, God. Like,
he had like the Coke bottle glasses with the like bowl haircut doing the Chinese thing.
That even that ad was annoying.
I was like, Low Res was like, how did he get away with this? Like, this is a guy who made a career out of complaining about how Latinos were represented in media, and then he goes and does this.
He's always been a hypocritical dickhead. It's like he's one of the first guys to make the complaints about Steven Seagal being rude on the set of Executive Decision or whatever. It's like, well, in your case, you probably deserved it, you ridiculous idiot. You know, it's like he's awful. Like he's always playing Italians and other ethnicities besides Hispanic. It's really. He's lousy. You
know? Well, like Mario.
It was Chinese eyes when he was masturbating in that film Spun.
Oh my gosh.
If you can understand.
And he talks through his teeth a lot. Like he doesn't open his teeth when he speaks.
Man. Hey, yeah. Spun.
Hey, I was really good. You like me in Spun?
I got Spun here, Spun.
Yeah. He needs to open his damn mouth, deliver his lines. He's pretty good in Summer of Sam. I think that's the only time I liked him in any movie.
That is a good performance.
That's
one
also
of
the only Spike
movies.
Lee movie I ever liked. The rest of them are garbage, but that one's pretty good.
Yeah.
Did it have Brothers on the Wall?
Not a very glamorous 70s movie.
No, not at all. That's the way it really was. Sleazy and dirty and awful.
Bit like Spike.
But yeah, so Sidekicks, I think like Karate Kid, it's a movie that is able to kind of coast a little bit on the other stuff that's in there. Because Karate Kid, you know, nobody likes Daniel LaRusso. Like, everybody agrees he sucks.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've got Arnold from Happy Days as Mr. Miyagi.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Elizabeth Shue, you've got the music, you've got the vibes, you've got the karate. I think, you know, this one you've got, I think the callbacks to the Chuck Norris movies are really funny. The action's kind of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, I wouldn't consider it like a real action movie.
The one thing that saved Jonathan Brandis such a bad performance was a lot of the boys would have been staring at Danica McKellar through the film and not worrying about him.
Oh. Yeah, you know what's funny, Stu, is I was thinking, like, I wonder if there's any Manosphere articles out there about how, like, he likes Winnie from Happy Days, and he's like, hey, I like you, and she's like, I like you too, and he's like, well, we like each other, why don't we date? And she's like, well, you're kind of pathetic, so no. And he goes, you just pity me, and runs away. But then she's all into him after he whips the bully. The gym, like, once he's using physical violence to assert himself, then she's like, ooh, like, what are you doing this weekend?
Yeah.
his asthmatic ass is getting laid this weekend.
That was another thing. Yeah, I know, right? Just bring your inhaler.
Mid pump.
I think the decision to make him an asthmatic was a very poor one, because it made him seem physically weak, and it made him seem weak across the board. Like, he's physically weak, he's emotionally weak, he's, you know,
he might as well have had AIDS.
John,
about how to edit all this stuff out.
No. John, would you like to know where his grave is so you can piss on it some more? The man's
I got
dead.
Nothing against the actor. It's the way it's written. Like, having him with the asthma, like, I don't recall any scene where, like, maybe Mako's shown him some Qigong exercises where he conquers the asthma. That might have helped. Or, you know, something a little more about the physicality of learning martial arts and improving yourself. It's because it's about a self-improvement, self-evolving. It's not really there. You know, it's just his fantasies and basically making his fantasies come true.
Yeah, and that's the part that reminds me of All Monsters Attack, which is the
Godzilla's Revenge.
Yeah, Godzilla's Revenge is the other title.
For the Gen Xers, Godzilla's Revenge. Yeah.
Yes. And that's the one that's about a kid who loves Godzilla, and he's bullied, and he has these fantasies where he's hanging out on Monster Island with Manila, and Godzilla handles bullies, which is by whipping the crap out of them.
Yeah, it's a pro-violence kids movie. I love those.
Which inspires him.
Godzilla's Revenge is
like
the best kids movie ever, because it's pro-violence. Hey, you got a problem with the bully? Beat his ass. Just beat his ass.
Like, what?
Let's get in the psychobabble. Kick his ass.
Knuckle
sandwich.
I've never understood.
With peppers and mustard and bam, right?
Whenever you see lists of, like, the worst Godzilla movies, it's on there, and I'm like, no, this is one of the great Godzilla movies.
Yeah, those are fucking assholes. I want everything to be like the 1954 Godzilla, you know, they want black and white and nuclear messages. No, this is way more important. Kick his ass, kid. Kick his ass. Because that's what Godzilla does.
And, that's
on
what...
His son's tail, makes him breathe fire on the fucking praying mantis. It's the greatest kids film ever. I'm gonna watch that with my son when he gets back from Utah.
It's an amazing kids movie. No, it really is. And you know, whenever people go, oh, that's one of my least favorite Godzilla movies, I'm like, you're not a real fan, pal. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it sticks in the mud.
I have no love for Godzilla films, though. If people like them, that's fine. But I'm still fascinated by Godzilla 1985. I want to see it for some
great
reason.
Movie.
Is it?
Well, okay. John's going, is it? It's not. But it's okay. But I have a special affection for it because it was, I remember renting it at Blockbuster when I was a kid and just like adoring it, you know, and I was too young to know better. But when you watch it now, it's kind of like,
okay. Not great. Okay.
You know, it's okay.
Just for some reason, I've always been fascinated. All right. Is it available on home video at all?
The Japanese version is. The American cut is not. The American cut is with Raymond Burr has not been available since VHS.
It's an illegal quagmire because the New World Pictures Library, that the ownership's in dispute, and also Toho, because they licensed it to New World Pictures, there's a ownership dispute on that.
Okay.
Because Godzilla is like one of the most protected IPs out there, you know, in terms of trademark and intellectual property.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too bad because that's the one that I rented when I was a kid. And I've seen the Japanese one since, but but I've never, I haven't been able to watch that one since. I'll have to hunt down some version.
Yeah, the Japanese version is superior. The Raymond Burr version is, they didn't know whether to be goofy or serious. And it kind of bounces between those two tones.
Which, you know, I think the Raymond Burr version of the original is quite good. I mean, I like Godzilla King.
It's all right. It's okay for what it is.
Yeah, I mean,
if you can't watch something with subtitles, you know, it's a good alternative.
Sometimes I'll throw that version on when I'm just like not in the mood to read, you know, like.
What about the 1998 version, which I do like?
Oh God,
no.
I like.
Maybe they should have had Raymond Burr on there, fucking Matthew Broderick. That would have made it more interesting, probably, to
Boy, that seltzer's making him angry today, isn't it, Hunter? Jeez.
I fucking hate that 98 version, and I hate Matthew Broderick, and I hate Ferris Bueller, and I hate Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin. I fucking hate everything they've done. Even the movies I've never seen, because I didn't see anything they made after that. Fuck them, fuck The Patriot too, because I'll never watch it.
What about 10,000 BC, whatever it's called? No?
Oh, that's not watching that shit.
I tried watching it, and I bailed after half an hour.
With the actors with their shiny white teeth, like they've just been to the dentist.
And narration by Omar Sharif.
Oh, God.
But there was some cultural healing, John. Because they brought back that Godzilla in Godzilla Final Wars.
Right.
Godzilla kills him in one move. And he destroys the architectural monstrosity that is the Sydney Opera House in the process.
Yeah, it's true. He throws him into the Opera House, doesn't he? And burns and fries him.
Like, that building is ugly as sin, and seeing it get destroyed but was like,
yeah,
awesome. Love it.
I don't know.
For those of us who wanted to see Jimmy Wang Yu destroy it and Man from Hong Kong, Godzilla did what Jimmy Wang Yu did.
I knew Stuart would not have a problem with me saying
that. Not at all. Not at all. I must seek this movie out now.
Yeah, Godzilla Final Wars. It is. Yeah. It's got some good Australian scenes.
Does it?
Yeah.
Does it have a scene
from,
of a?
And it's got the Godzilla from '98 in it.
Oh, so, cool. Yeah. Has it got any scenes of the stupid fat Victorian premier who's got found lying about his fucking illegal activities getting destroyed at all? Named Daniel Andrews?
No, I think this was before that.
What a fucking show.
It was a bit of a while. It was way back there. It's also a divisive movie among the fans. Because it plays it up almost so goofy. It's like a 66 Batman in a way.
Yeah, they kind of try to make it like the 70s Godzilla movies, but those movies kind of took themselves seriously and this one doesn't. But
yeah,
it's directed.
Well, they play
by,
it straight, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's directed by Ryuhei Kitamura, who did Versus. He's kind of known for his kinetic action style.
He can't make a complete film. Have you ever seen his live action Lupin the Third? Oh, God.
No. Yes. But I've heard it's awful. You know,
it's terrible.
But you know, he kind of got big because Versus was this sort of eye popping movie, but it's completely incoherent.
Yeah.
But Godzilla Final Wars, I think it's a lot of fun. I like it. It's got a lot of, you know, action and with humans fighting between the monster action. You know, it's a really brisk movie. He was trying
not to make a boring Godzilla movie at all.
Yeah, he didn't want you to go, well, we're just kind of waiting for the monsters to come around.
Now we got to watch the people drive around in their Jeep and put out their scientific equipment and observe the monsters.
Yeah, we don't have any of that. It's like motorcycles and like flying off the motorcycle to knee someone in the face. You know,
he's got the MMA fighters are cast in the film and stuff.
Yeah, it's a live action anime.
Deep watch. Was there a Godzilla from 2016 or 15 or something?
Yeah, there was the one with Bryan Cranston and
that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw that in 3D. We've got it. I watched it upstairs in 3D. Couldn't make out a damn thing what was going on.
Well, and that one was very like, oh, we're going to show Godzilla from the human's point of view. So it's very like on the ground.
Okay.
And, you know, when I saw it in the theater, I really enjoyed it. When I saw it at home, I did not.
It's hard to watch on video. And I like it.
It doesn't work on the small screen, but on a theatrical screen, I think it works great. I did not care for King of the Monsters, the one they did after that.
Okay. I did think about watching that.
But I did enjoy Godzilla versus Kong, the new one. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was the one I think I wanted to see, the one with Kong. Is there one called Kong Skull Island?
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Is that any good?
Yeah. I hated it, but, you know.
Okay.
Roll your own dice.
So if John hates it, it must be good then.
Some people like it, but it has a real nasty anti-American streak in it because it's basically made for China.
Oh, is it? Okay, I didn't know that.
Because the American soldiers are all portrayed as morons, and the hero is that, what's his name, Loki guy, that actor. The scientific team is going in there with an army or like platoon or marines or whatever the hell they are, and with Sam Jackson acting like Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now. And and for no reason whatsoever, they bring in this British mercenary, you know, to bring along with the team. And it's just to get Loki in the film, because I guess he's big in China because of the Avengers, all like that crappy Marvel garbage.
Yeah,
and no, I strongly dislike the guy who directed it.
Yeah, that asshole. He hijacked a plane yet? Has he hijacked a plane and flown it into a building?
He's one of those guys who makes up lies about altercations he has.
Oh man, I'm sitting next to Richard Spencer here.
Yeah, you know, he just it's like, oh yeah, okay, pal. You know, that didn't happen. But
yo man, he was tweeting alt-right stuff.
He had memes on his phone that I didn't.
He kept
like.
Doing this to me.
Like I forget the guy's name, but he has this. Oh, he's just a total lolcow. But
oh boy, no thanks. I'll pass.
It's like worthy of a 100-page Kiwi Farm thread.
But
like
the
Razor Fist.
Yes, almost as much as Razor Fist. Oh my
gosh. But the Godzilla versus Kong movie I enjoyed, which was not directed by him. So
okay, oh we'll see that one then on your
yeah. I thought it was. I didn't know what. Did you enjoy it, John? I can't remember what.
I thought it was okay. I watched it with the family, and my wife just said that's the weirdest film she's ever seen, or something. I think whole going into the center of the Earth stuff is so bizarre. To
Hollow Earth.
You were not
what,
expecting it.
That's what put it over the top for me. Was they did Hollow Earth.
That's the stuff I enjoyed on the big screen. That stuff looked great. I actually thought it looked. Oh, he's in Pellucidor. Cool. You know.
But I thought the monster fights in it worked better than in King of the Monsters, which. They just felt, it just didn't feel right to me. I don't know. I just didn't.
Well, they shook the camera around a lot in King of the Monsters. Yeah. But at least King of the Monsters has that one funny scene where Ice Cube Jr., Ice Cube's kid, looks at King Ghidorah and says, "What the fuck?" Just like, is that? Because that was a purely real reaction that you would have in real life. Any battle-hardened Marine would look at a three-headed dragon and go, "What the fuck?"
Those are the same words being spoken right now by people watching us on YouTube going, "I wanted a Sidekicks review." They're talking about
nobody wants a Sidekicks review, Stu. Nobody remembers this movie.
Hey, I got to tell you, though, when I posted about it, a lot of people were responding. You know, normally when I post stories or stuff about movies, nobody says anything, or they might do a thumbs up or something. But this one, a lot of people my age were going, "Oh, I remember watching this. Oh yeah. Oh wow. How does it hold up?" You know, like a lot of people, my
age. You got a lot of hugging hearts.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yes. Yes. No, but people actually like saying stuff, not just like react. Yes. I think, you know, this movie, I don't think did very well at the box office.
No, it did. It actually did really good. It was Chuck Norris's only hit. I think it was his first hit in several years, because everybody forgets that like 5 or 6 years of Cannon films were box office duds.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, was he making money with those Cannon films in the 80s?
No. Delta Force did all right. Invasion USA did okay. Did okay. Starting with Firewalker, I think the rest of them were bombing left and right. The Hitman barely played anywhere. That's the funny thing about this movie. There's a fantasy sequence based on the Hitman. That thing went straight to video almost everywhere.
And I love that Jonathan Brandis has Chuck's greasy mullet.
Yeah, yeah. That wasn't a hit movie. That barely anybody saw that, you know. But Aaron Norris directed it, so he wanted to make fun of his own work, I think. So
But
all that stuff was bombing. Cannon Films was going bankrupt. I think Menachem Golan actually left the company to start 21st Century. He bought 21st Century Film Distribution and changed it, turned it into like a Cannon Jr. And Norris's movies were just not getting released anywhere. They were barely playing outside some big cities. And Sidekicks was done independently. It was completely independently financed. I think it was released by distributors, not even around anymore.
It was produced by a big furniture magnet. Yeah.
It was an indie production, and they did saturation marketing, I think, in cities like more like four walling.
Well, and I think they did that in Dallas because
it did like 40 million, which was good for a Chuck Norris movie at the time. That was a pretty big hit for him.
I think they, you know, like this dude put up like $8 million, and he was a furniture salesman, and Chuck would do commercials for him.
Right.
And Chuck said, hey, why don't you produce this movie? And he financed a bunch of it, but I think they must have really heavily promoted this thing in Dallas, Texas.
Speaking of $40 million, have you guys been following Rob Zombie on social media? And he's war. And him going, where are people getting $40 million budget for this film? I watched a video on YouTube of a guy. I forgot his apologies to the channel creator. He reviewed the Munsters trailer and he brought up a very good point. This thing had been shooting for 10 months. So that's going to chew up a lot of budget time. And was filmed outside of the US, so there was no lockdowns and no, you know, stopping of production. It was filmed in, what was it, Bulgaria?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this thing's been shooting for 10 months. Now Zombie's backflipping, going, oh, it was always going straight to Netflix. Oh, it was always going to go straight to home video. Went for the longest time.
I remember hearing it was going
to
come out in theaters. Was that BS?
No.
I remember hearing it was coming out a limited theatrical run.
He is on the back foot with a lot of people with the pitchfork and torch crowd are after him with this trailer. It is universally panned. I've just seen countless people in various forums, etc., going, this is the worst trailer I've ever seen. And that fucker's now on the back foot. He didn't expect this sort of backlash with that trailer.
I played it for my wife earlier, and when Sherry Moon Zombie's up there, she goes, is that the director's wife? She doesn't know anything. I said, yes, it is. And she goes, she's not good.
No. Nope.
I went, yeah, you know, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Which is odd, because I spoke about this when I recorded with Wolfie yesterday over at Watch This Movie. We spoke about The Fanatic, the Fred Durst film. And I said, for a film that I expected nothing from, Fred Durst has got, he's got some chops. He's not, you know, an A-list filmmaker, but he can tell a story better than Zombie can. Zombie's had multiple attempts at telling stories. House of a Thousand Corpses, Devil's Rejects, etc., 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 and he still can't get it right. Now he's going to the comedy realm, and for a guy who is actually quite funny if you watch him in interviews, this does not seem funny. Again, none of us have seen it, we don't know, but boy, that trailer and that other one that was for the home video release, yes, looked a little bit better, but it still wasn't winning me over.
Well, do you know why Fred Durst is a better director than Rob Zombie? Because he's seen Fight Club 28 times.
Has he really? Yeah.
That's a lyric from the Limp Bizkit song.
So. Is it?
I've seen Fight Club 28 times.
I thought it's because he did it all for the nookie.
That's right.
That is a motivator.
When I went over to Laser Craze's boss, his place at like 98, he was playing that fucking song on his Cambridge Soundworks speakers.
Like John,
he would play it so often that he would play it when he was working and stuff, and then Garrow started doing an impression of him going, "I did it all for the nookie." Yes.
Did he go, John, this band sounds like Faith No More.
I like them. They rock. All he listened to was at the time was Limp Bizkit, Kid Rock, Godsmack, and probably Led Zeppelin. But I would go over there. He would just be blasting Godsmack. He had the CD on repeat. And he would just sit there and he'd take a drag of a cigarette. He'd serve that death brew coffee that he'd always serve you, you know, sweetened with amaretto. And then he would take a drag on the cigarette. Godsmack. Great.
He'd be like, John, listen to the bass line on Voodoo.
It sounds
so
really
heavy.
Good.
Really cavernous bass line.
I like that.
John, listen to the bass throughout And Justice for All. It's there. It exists. It's real subtle.
Let's read the cards while we listen to Godsmack. Sully Lives just Just right down the road. He likes Wicca. He's into the Wicca.
Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yep.
So no blasting of King Diamond when you'd go visit at all?
Very rarely. Yeah. It was. I don't think he ever played King Diamond when I was over there. He may not have even had the CDs anymore. I don't know. Or may have never owned them.
Mm.
He's one of those guys, he would listen, and we all, I guess, know people like this. They listen to about 3 or 4 CDs over and over again. And 2 years later, they'll buy 3 or 4 more CDs and listen to those repeatedly when they're not listening to the rock radio.
And yet he owned the music store. It makes no sense at one point. Or worked at a music store.
He managed a music, I think, I think it was posters and t-shirts mainly. It wasn't, they didn't actually sell records. Yeah. Okay. Stairway to Heaven. I managed it.
to get that guy on one day for an interview, but it's not going to happen, right?
Oh, no, he won't talk about anything. I heard you do an interview for this documentary about Stairway to Heaven. What are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. He's in constant denial of everything.
Yeah, it's out there. So, yeah, he did do it because I've heard it. When you hear that voice.
Did Garrow tell you that?
He's lying?
He's lying?
He's a liar.
So, with sidekicks, John, do you think this was Stu's? Do you think this was Chuck's biggest hit because it was? Do you think it was the kid market coming into it?
Yeah, it was his biggest hit probably since I think his American cinema movies did really well, like in the late 70s up to the Octagon, and then American cinema didn't want to work with him anymore for some reason, even though he pretty much built the company. With Good Guys Wear Black and Force of One and Octagon making so much money. So when he did all his Canon films and he did those studio pictures like Forced Vengeance, which is one everybody's demanding to be released on Blu-ray, that was a huge bomb. It grossed like $3 or $4 million. And that was for MGM and it completely tanked. Silent Rage did okay. It did like $18 million. So when he did those Canon films, they would kind of open decently and then boom. You know, second week. It was like a Marvel movie today. 70% drop. So they did okay, and they made money because they were so cheap to make. Then when they started bombing, his stuff wasn't getting in the theaters very much. Hero and the Terror was one he was heavily invested in. It was barely released. Meanwhile, Seagal and Van Damme are cleaning up the R-rated action movie market. I mean, their stuff was making so much money. It was crazy. And so Chuck, because he's stuck in this Canon Films contract, I think he was kind of letting that kind of play out. And he does sidekicks. He aims it. He makes sure that it's PG rated for one thing. And markets it to kids. And I think that's one thing that hurt him when he started doing R-rated films was a lot of his market was children and they could not get into the films. And yeah, I started to wonder if I notice, okay, Lone Wolf McQuade is a really violent movie. And there's a lot of sexual suggestiveness in it too. And a lot of profanity, but he appealed to the MPAA to give it a PG rating and it got it. And I think he knew that his next movie had to be a PG so he could get the kids back in the theater because Silent Rage and Force Vengeance were such disappointing, you know, movies at the box office. He couldn't just rely on that, what they used to call the action track market, the action movie circuit.
How did An Eye for an Eye do?
It did okay, but Avco Embassy was like on its last legs and was bought by Norman Lear and then completely changed as a studio. Like they didn't even make movies anymore. They were like a production unit with a library, which was really weird. Norman Lear basically destroyed Avco Embassy.
Hmm.
You know, and was producing TV shows and, you know, selling videotapes. They weren't making movies anymore.
Wasn't Chuck making pictures? Walker, Texas Ranger by this time in 92?
Okay, Walker, Texas Ranger. Sidekicks did really well. Then he did Top Dog. It did okay in regional markets, but it wasn't like a hit, you know. And he, meanwhile, was making a deal with whatever was left of Canon Films to make Walker, Texas Ranger and produce it in Texas. He did not want to work in Hollywood. He wanted to do everything out of Dallas and Houston and film everything there. And I think they made a deal with CBS to basically do Walker, Texas Ranger and film it 100% in Texas and there were some legal hurdles to cross with that one, but that ended up being his biggest success, having a weekly TV show, Saturday night. It was in the top 20 ratings like every year. It was a hugely successful show.
Eight seasons it ran. That's
a very hell of a successful run. And it's in syndication all the time. Turn on any local antenna station that shows old TV shows or whatever, they're running Walker Texas Ranger like at some time of the day.
What about Code of Silence? This is
Code of Silence.
One of Chuck's better movies.
Yeah, Missing in Action. Chris Pogliali told me Missing in Action had his biggest opening, I think, and it did. And that was his first movie for Canon. And then Code of Silence came out in the springtime. I think it had been filmed before for Orion Pictures. It was a critically acclaimed film, and it did pretty decently at the box office. But instead of working with Orion Pictures and making more movies in that vein, like with some aim for quality, he has this contract with Canon that's paying him. I think it was I got the numbers. It was crazy. It was like $250,000 a month or something nuts like that to just basically not work for anybody else.
Well, yeah, because I was reading in Chris's book, These Fists Break Bricks. He said that, you know, Chuck got in with Canon because they were like, we're going to support you. And he was like, they gave me a break when no one else would, you know, I owe them a lot. Like, he's very positive talking about Canon Pictures, even though I think we all agree Chuck made his worst movies at Canon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He did. They're his worst films, but they let his brother direct movies, which helped a lot. And I've met Aaron Norris. He's a super, super nice guy. He's absolutely one of the nicest people I've ever met from Hollywood showbiz, whatever you want to call it. Super genuine, super nice guy. And they gave his brother a break. His brother got to direct some movies and basically, you know, and directed Sidekicks, you know, independently. And I believe Aaron actually bought this film recently. He owns it now. He owns the film.
Really?
So, yeah. Okay. So Stars or whatever, they're paying a licensing fee to Aaron Norris. And so Chuck does those Canon films. The only problem is they killed his film career, but his style of filmmaking or his style of action was going to be out of vogue anyway. And he was getting older. Like, he couldn't do those type of fight scenes much longer. Even in this film, I noticed some of his fancier kicks were doubled by Chip Wright. Chip Wright was a student of his who looked just like him. He looked like a younger Chuck Norris. He even got his beard and hair styled just like Chuck, so he could double for him in movies. And he was his double on Walker Texas Ranger for many years too. And I could tell Chip was doing some of those fancy kicks.
You can tell that this is a very stuntman heavy movie. You know, it's, I think Jonathan Brandis does a little bit with
it cuts to him in the octagon fantasy with a double doing everything.
And, you know? but like, and you know, there's that scene where he's on the hill doing the nunchucks, but you don't ever see his face. You know, like this is a very stuntman heavy movie. And the, you know, like the opening, you have all this ninja action, but you don't see anybody. They're all masked and you can tell it's not Chuck. It's not Jonathan Brandis. The action's very Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's silly with them doing the high kicks and stuff. Chuck was definitely getting older by this point, but he does this movie Sidekicks, which is aimed squarely at the young millennial boys. And then he does, Hellbound, where he fights Satan.
Didn't play theaters. Did not play some of those. Went straight
and
to video.
And then Top Dog, which young boys do not want to see freaking Top Dog.
No.
You know, they don't want to see Chuck hanging out with a dog. They want to see him whipping bad guys' butts, you know?
Yeah, he was thinking it was like the 70s and you could still make a Benji type of movie.
Or like Turner and Hooch.
It was practically a ripoff of Turner and Hooch. Funny thing is, Turner and Hooch was written by the same screenwriters who wrote Code of Silence.
Was it really?
Which had me wondering if it was originally pitched to Chuck and he said no. And then when it was a moderate hit for Tom Hanks, he was like, well, darn, I'm going to rip him off and do Top Dog.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do my
own
about
Top
Dog movie.
Turner and Hooch is actually a fun movie. I remember enjoying it. Been many years since I've seen it, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it
did well for Tom Hanks.
Mm.
Yeah. It built his audience, you know, it was building it up. This film, it did well. And I think it's simply because PG rating and it brought the kids back in and it was marketed to kids and it worked.
Yeah. And, you know, when I saw it, I just remember thinking I wanted more Chuck and I wanted less of this sniveling dweeb. I was saying dwerp.
The new word.
I wanted less of this kind of lolcow kid and I wanted more Chuck. But, you know, I do think when he meets Chuck, when he's like sitting there at the match and he meets Chuck, I thought that was kind of a sweet moment, you know, that kind of.
Yeah. And that's where you saw Brandis's acting skill kind of come in.
Yeah. And Brandis is not the problem. I think he could have played this role. It's not written right. It's just the character is not well conceived.
I'm sorry. Right. Chuck Norris is not sitting in an aisle seat amongst the general public and nobody's coming up to Chuck Norris.
It's not. In fact, I kind of thought that the ending might have indicated that Chuck even being with them on the team was a fantasy. Because he kind of sits there with Chuck at the end and then Chuck disappears.
Yeah.
And you see the kid in the wheelchair find the Chuck magazine, which was, I was like, oh man, I really remember that and thinking, what a strange ending.
It's a really cruel ending because you've got a child in a wheelchair who can't do a sidekick in Find This Magazine who can't move his legs. So
yeah, I remember thinking, how bizarre. Like, why'd they choose to do that when I was a kid? I was going,
so now Chuck,
you think
cure.
It's like the Taxi Driver ending. Is this a fantasy?
No, it really is. Actually, I was, John, that came to mind was Taxi Driver where, you know, but I was kind of thinking, was Chuck being on their karate team a fantasy? Because he kind of disappears at the end when they're talking.
Yeah.
And plus it's just such so silly. Like she goes up and she's like, Chuck. He's like, I need to go teach this guy a lesson. I'm on your team. You know? And this guy needs a lesson in humility.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, Chuck is just kind of a magical creature in this movie. And so I remember watching it and I was so excited to watch a Chuck Norris movie because I'd never seen a Chuck Norris movie. This was a Chuck Norris movie that I was allowed to see, okay, because my parents were very strict. And when I saw it and it was just kind of the action was goofy and it was centered around this kid that I hated, I was kind of pissed off. But and so I really didn't like it. But when I watch it now, I find it amusing and it weirdly works as a nostalgia piece for me.
I can see that.
You know, like it would not have served that function at the time. But now when I look at it, I'm like, wow, this looks like Texas in 1992. This brings back the smells, the features. And, you know, every young boy took karate in 1992. Like all my friends took karate. I took karate. I was not an athletic kid, but boy, I wanted to take karate because that was cool. You know, we love Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know. Three Ninjas, the John Turteltaub film, you know.
Well, the irony is now that you took karate because primarily of Chuck Norris, right? Then Chuck Norris.
Well, it might have been before this, but it was just in the culture.
Okay,
you know?
But then Chuck Norris becomes a Texas Ranger, and well, now you know, yeah, he has the influence.
Yeah,
he has the influence.
I just followed the Chuck, you know.
Well, that's not a bad thing. But when you watch shows like Walker, Texas Ranger, that would give you the same feeling of nostalgia as well, obviously being shot in Dallas and Houston for you.
Yeah, it's shot in Dallas. I've never really sat down and dug into Walker, Texas Ranger.
You should. It's fun.
Although the there's this guy at work. He loves to play the clip of Haley Joel Osment going, Walker told me I have AIDS. He'll just randomly go, hey man, check this out. Walker told me I have AIDS. Just like, he'll like try to get you with it. Like, hey man, I need to show you something.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I don't know what to say.
But show created by everyone's favorite sexual predator, Paul Haggis.
Yes.
Yeah, and he was ashamed of it too. He was always bad-mouthing it. Oh, I have sins to make up to the world. I think J. Michael's
While he hammers that check. I'm sorry. If you're making money off of something, shut up. I don't want to hear people go talk about how ashamed they are of something that they're hammering checks for. Yeah. If you don't like it so much, stop making money off.
Oh, he did.
That pisses me off.
No. He did. He did hammer the checks and send them straight to L. Ron. Yeah, L. Ron got the money.
Scientology got his money.
Mm-hmm.
But no. Anytime an actor is like, "Oh, this thing I did," it's like, "Yeah, well, it seemed to pay for your house, pal." You know, it's like,
yeah,
you know, like I always liked Michael Caine because they were like, "Hey, Michael Caine, you were in this piece of crap movie, Jaws: The Revenge. Did you ever watch it? It was so bad." And he's like, "No, but I sold the house it bought me." You know,
yeah, he doesn't you care. Know?
Yeah, just
to
like,
him, it's just another film.
Yeah, I made money off of it. What do you care? You know,
it's work. You have to make the work. You have to write. You know?
Yeah,
and when you're an actor, you take what you can get. People don't curate their careers. Not everybody's Steven Spielberg or Quentin Tarantino. You know,
and when you're a writer, you better write what you can and create as many shows as you can.
Yeah, if Chuck Norris comes and says, "Hey, you're a guy who develops sitcoms and TV shows. Help me develop this thing, sir. Yes, sir." Because, you know, Chuck, the Norris brothers, they pay him, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I remember there was on a Facebook thread, Josh Olson was boasting that he turned down becoming a writer for Walker, Texas Ranger.
He was good for you.
That sort of thing.
Good and for you.
Yeah. I'm like, "Oh, that's real smart for you, asshole, because you would have been rolling in the royalties." I'm glad because I don't have to watch anything Josh Olson wrote for that show.
Yeah.
He was also joking because one of the standards in the story Bible was you could not write a lot of dialogue for Chuck. And I'm like, "Yeah, because you assholes are in love with your own dialogue and you think everybody talks like you. And you have a hero. It's supposed to be a stoic, tough guy yapping about baseball or pop culture or something.
Pop culture. He's gonna come in and start talking about like his favorite TV shows and talk about you know, like Chuck is obsessed with David Cronenberg films this week.
Yes,
Chuck,
exactly.
Or Chuck just can't stop talking about these Harlan Ellison short stories.
Boy, I read "I Have No Mouth and Must Scream," and my gosh, it was scary. And, Terrell, you got to read it.
And that guy, like, you know, because he turned that down, he's going to be hammering out Trailers from Hell stuff forever because, you know, I'm going to turn down Walker, Texas Ranger, but guess what? I'm going to write this article called "No, I Will Not Read Your Effing Script."
Which got him, appears to have gotten him completely blacklisted in the industry.
Yeah, like nobody, I'm sorry, but. When people, I think it is so classless when these people crap where they eat, and they absolutely deserve to be blackballed for acting like such arrogant pricks. You know?
Yeah. Because you look at his IMDb, nothing after that article was published. Nothing.
Yeah. He just does the Trailers from Hell stuff. He just, you know, gives Joe Dante a platform to come in and, you know, sort of, you know, talk about how everybody's wrong about whatever opinion he has that week.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
which I like Joe Dante films, but boy, that guy's unpleasant in interviews.
Yeah, I think he's a creep. There's something weird about him.
Yeah, he seems very hostile and mean. Like,
yeah,
which, you know, his movies I don't think really have that vibe, but. I don't know. Like, I know Walter's a huge fan of him, and he's just like, "Well, the work speaks for itself." But you know, I always get the sense that, you know, he's extremely angry, like extremely angry, and just
because they're picked. All these guys are picked on nerds,
and same vibe I get from John Landis. John Landis has the same thing where John Landis is. Always waiting to get one over on you in the conversation.
Yeah. Because they were high school nerds. They were, you know, they carry these resentments their entire lives and it comes off in their work.
Yeah. Yeah. But not
best thing John Landis ever did was schlock. Anything off that
probably
sucks.
Was.
That's right.
Kentucky Fried Movie, which he didn't, I don't even think he really directed.
No.
Kentucky Fried Movie, I think, is more a Zsasz film than a John Landis film.
Yeah, there's no John Landis touch to that movie.
No, it's all Zucker, Abrams Zucker. Like, you watch that movie, everybody and then survived. You watch Airplane.
Yeah.
You know, no one was killed. These are obviously the same two directors, or if you watched Kentucky Fried Movie and then Animal House, you know, it's completely different.
And
Animal House, I think, is more Harold Ramis and those National Lampoon guys.
It has that dark humor of National Lampoon
Belushi and the other guy, that Doug, what's his name?
Doug Kinney.
Kinney, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, the one who, he fell off a cliff in Hawaii, and then all of his old friends think that his drug dealer pushed him off the cliff or something. I don't know. There's
Yikes.
Yeah.
But no, like, I think John Landis, if you're looking at movies that are more him, like American Werewolf, probably.
Mm. Yeah. Definitely. Because he wrote that when he was like 19 or 20.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a script.
And that's purely him.
And that's it. I heard an interview with Rick Baker, and they were saying, oh, what was crazy about that transformation is it takes place in broad daylight, whereas everybody else tries to hide it. And Rick Baker goes, yeah, I hated that. Because it meant I had to really do well. Because I could have used a shadow or two. That would have been nice.
Speaking of Rick Baker, supposedly he made this Godzilla puppet for the Steve Miner Godzilla movie that was never made. Was going to be directed by Steve Miner in like 1983 or 82. It was written by Fred Decker. And of course, the script is lousy. It just plagiarizes Gorgo or whatever. But they were going to have Ray Harryhausen supervise the stop motion animation of Godzilla attacking San Francisco. And they were going to have a Rick Baker puppet for the close-up shots. And apparently, Rick Baker has the full-size sculpture of this puppet in his shop. No one can see it. He cannot allow anybody to. He lets people see it if he really trusts you, but he doesn't want photos of it getting out. It's never been photographed, as far as I know. And apparently it's striking. Now, this is just a rumor. I don't know how true it is, but it's just a rumor I heard. He's got this amazing Godzilla he sculpted like in his shop, and he's only shown it to like his guys who work for him or whatever.
It's basically the same as the Jerry Lewis clown movie. Only a handful of people have seen
The Clown Cried.
That one.
The Godzilla cried because they found out it wasn't getting made.
You know what's funny is Rick Baker, I heard him say something about how the industry's changed. And he said, you know, early in my career, I was always kind of constrained on what I could do because you'd have a producer that had what they wanted. And you do what they wanted. He goes, you know, you would go in and say, Dino, like, you can't do the ape as a giant robot. You've got to, it's going to be me in a suit. Dino would say, get out. You know, like, and he goes, but at the end of the day, he goes, you had somebody who made a decision. And that was that. And he goes, movies today, they've got 5,000 producers and none of them want to make a decision.
No.
And so nobody knows what they want. And then at the last minute, you get your marching orders and it's confusing. he goes,
too many cooks.
He goes, nobody's in control. He goes, there's just a bunch of producers and nobody wants to make a decision. And I thought,
unless you're Rob Zombie.
Right. But yeah. Rob Zombie's got a vision.
He's our last auteur.
He's an auteur.
Him and Fred Durst.
You know who else is an auteur? Aaron Norris. Aaron Norris.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, he's a genuine guy.
He gets to spoof his own work in this film. How many directors get to do that? Because he directed at least one of the Missing in Actions. He directed the third one. And he directed Hitman. And he spoofs both of them in here.
Yes, he spoofs both of them. And the only movie he didn't direct that he spoofs is The Octagon.
Yep.
Because you have the ninja set piece at the beginning. But yeah, the Missing in Action spoof is hilarious just because it's so racist. And then you've got
the sequence as well.
And then there was the Western. What about the Western one? Remember the one?
I didn't understand that. That had no place in this film.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always forget about it because it's so out of place because it's not making fun of any specific Chuck movie. It's like a
Chuck never made a Western.
No. And he goes in and they're like, he's like, I'll have a glass of milk. And then Chuck's like,
yeah, like,
I'll have milk too.
And really, how many of your generation knew what Westerns were? Because they were kind of hidden from your generation.
Honestly, you know, I didn't discover that genre till high school. Because they just weren't a thing. Like, okay, the closest thing I'd seen to a Western was like the Cowboys of Moo Mesa. Remember that show? Let me make sure I'm getting the name right.
You sure this wasn't Baywatch, Hawaii?
No. Cowboys of Moo Mesa. Okay, it was called Wild West Cowboys of Moo Mesa, and it was a cartoon that had like bulls and cows that were anthropomorphic as a Western.
Never heard of it.
Never.
I thought maybe you were going to say that Bugs Bunny cartoon where him and Yosemite Sam, and he kept saying,
I'd seen that stuff too. You know, I'd seen that. And I think I had seen like Davy Fess Parker as Davy Crockett, you know, like some of the Disney tier stuff. But I'd never seen I hadn't seen like any Pat Boone, not Pat Boone. I'm sorry.
Daniel Boone.
Roy Rogers or any of that, you know, I hadn't seen, John Wayne. I hadn't seen it. Like just the genre was dead. And, if there was a Western, it was something that was prestigious for adults, like, Unforgiven or something that you just weren't aware of because it wasn't for you. But yeah, I think the closest thing I'd seen to a Western was Cowboys of Moo Mesa.
I don't know shit about Westerns, but that sounds about as far removed from a Western as you could possibly get.
And this one, this cartoon was 1992 to 1993, so it was right in the pocket here.
Because I was wondering if it was the Hubba Bubba commercials for Hubba Bubba Bubblegum, where there was always in an old West town, and they had like Dub Taylor and... It might have had Jack Elam in the ad or something.
Oh, the Bubble-O Bill ice creams.
Yeah.
Mm.
But all you guys know of Westerns, so.
But, and one thing, too. One casting thing that cracks me up is Beau Bridges as the bumbling boomer dad.
Yeah. The cheaper Bridges.
And, yeah. Mm. And I'm sorry, but there are moments where as an actor... You have to go up to the director and say, this doesn't make sense. And I'm thinking of the scene where he takes his son to the evil Cobra Kai karate dojo and they're having class and Beau Bridges is like, excuse me. I would like to inquire in the middle of like some demonstration when they're all doing moves and stuff. And he just like walks out into the middle of the class.
Yeah.
I was going, who does that? Like, what's the matter with him? Is he have a mental problem? Like,
yeah, he's really, really rude, you know?
Yeah, I was going, like, I know his dad's, like, a single dad and software engineer, but this is, like, this is beyond, like, I'm kind of a loner. This is, like, full on, like, I have a diagnosable psychiatric condition.
Narcissism.
Just remember going, like, I was watching that going, if I was the actor, I would go, Aaron, can you explain to me why I'm doing this? Like, it's justify it, please.
Because if you've ever been to any martial arts school, nobody's gonna do that. Nobody will ever do that. They're not,
especially if they're people I don't know.
Yes. Well, it's just like the tournament they had at the end where they're doing like a breaking contest and breaking bricks and stuff, and it's all very silly. Interesting trivia note, though. You know, the women's form competitor that wins, Malia Bernal, is a real competitor, and or was at that time. And she's the mother of Mark Dacascos.
Oh,
what? She did look a bit older. I was watching it going, that lady's a little bit older. That's crazy. I didn't know that.
She used to be Malia Dacascos, I believe. Yeah.
Wow.
The crows.
She's married to Al. Al Dacascos, who was kind of a West Coast forms legend, you know, in competitions and everything.
The crying free man himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The crow.
Yeah, he was the crow. Yes,
the TV show.
Whatever.
Stairway to Heaven. I managed it.
No. He was also in the American Iron Chef.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yes, he was. Yeah.
He also played Woe Fat on the new Hawaii Five-0.
Did
and
he?
Of course. I nearly jumped out of my chair and cheered when I saw him in John Wick 3.
Oh, yeah.
I just remember going, Mark DeCascos! Yes!
Yeah, that was fun. I marked out for that pretty big. So seeing him and the guys from The Raid fight. Yeah. Kind of
and the guys
great.
From The Raid are like, it's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Wick.
Yeah, they're very, very polite while they're beating him up. I loved it.
Like, you know, and they actually used the guys from The Raid, unlike those horrible J.J. Abrams Star Wars movies where they show up and like run down a hallway. It's so stupid.
Yeah, have them eaten by a monster. Yeah, that's smart. Yeah, real.
Oh, we got the guys from The Raid. We got the guys from The Raid in the movie. Why?
Yeah.
Because why not?
You don't want to have them do some kicks or fight? No, they're just going to get eaten. What?
Pull out a knife.
The Raid in the movie.
Yeah.
Film nerds.
C-Lat something, you know, with a lightsaber. Nothing.
They'll see the dude's mustache and they'll go, oh, it's the guy from The Raid. I like this Star Wars.
That's all it is.
Now.
It's just a finger point gun. There's the guy from The Raid. That's all it is.
That parody movie, they referenced a movie I know. It's a joke.
Yeah, it's the 1941 of Star Wars movies.
1941 is better than the new Star Wars movie.
Yeah,
that's true. I mean, at least that's a movie. I don't know what the hell those new things are.
Like the sequence in 1941 where Slim Pickens tries to cut down the Christmas trees that are really Japanese spies. That's a funny scene.
That film has its moments.
It has scenes that are really good. As a whole, it's a freaking mess.
No,
but,
it is.
And it's got that was Toshiro Mifune's last movie, right?
It was. Yeah, because all those guys from USC, Spielberg, Milius, were huge Kurosawa nerds. And so they're going to work with Toshiro Mifune as soon as they can. You know, originally, did you know The Karate Kid, I think I'd said it on our show, was supposed to be directed by Clint Eastwood, starring Kyle Eastwood, and Toshiro Mifune was the top pick for Miyagi.
He's like, I want to work with the guy who did this.
Yeah.
I want to do the guy Toshiro what he did for me. Dollars. I want Toshiro to have a Hollywood career like I did.
Well, I hope he can speak English.
I just hope we can communicate.
And then he because Eastwood didn't get the project, he Columbia didn't want him for it. He banned all Coca-Cola machines from the filming of I think it was Heartbreak Ridge, and he had all Coca-Cola machines because Columbia owned Coca-Cola at the time. And so he wanted all these fucking Coke machines out of here.
Replace
him with Pepsi.
He's an absolute boss.
Assholes. Yeah. I wanted to direct The Karate Kid.
That should have been my picture. I would have had Sandra Locke, not Elizabeth Shue.
No.
Allie would have been older, like
Yeah,
40 something.
Johnny would have been a real Hell's Angel, you know.
There'd be a scene where Johnny takes her to the Daniel LaRusso takes her down to the jazz festival.
Yeah, Thelonious Monk is like jamming on the piano or something.
Yeah.
Johnny would have been played by Bill McKinney in his 40s.
That would have been great.
Yeah. It would have raped LaRusso. That would have been
played by William Smith.
Yeah. That's all right. And officiating the tournament would have been Clyde.
Yep. Yeah. Clyde the ape would have been flipping people off.
Clyde would have been the...
I saw somebody say this, and I remember thinking it, that Cry Macho is the unofficial third film in the Every Which Way But Loose trilogy.
Really?
Yeah, but it's just Clint with a chicken instead of a monkey.
I don't know if I can watch it. It's on HBO Max. I just don't know if I can. I don't know if I can.
I got to tell you, I watched it with zero expectations and I liked it. It has really, the premise is ridiculous. Okay.
Right.
Like Dwight Yoakam sending Clint go like collect his stepson. But then Clint goes down to Mexico and it's just him driving through Mexico and like hanging out with this chicken and like occasionally like stopping off to like have a dalliance with some Mexican girl, and you know, but it has this really comfy vibe. Like the look of Mexico is really nice. It's written by the guy who wrote Gran Torino and the Mule. So, you know,
so until just, the truck, until the Vote Bloomberg bumper sticker on the truck.
Yeah.
It's pretty, right. Pretty comfy.
But the when the movie starts, I was like, oh, this movie's awful. Like when Dwight Yoakam's telling him, like, there's, you get the exposition dump. But after that, I was kind of like sitting back going, yeah, you know, this is a comfy vibe movie. You know, I like it.
Which is funny because it was supposed to be a Schwarzenegger movie like 20 years ago, right?
Hey, I got the chicken here. We're going to drive to Mexico. Gonna be fun.
That's like that film he did, 1517 to Paris. I watched that. Oh, I bought it and I watched it. I'm sitting there going, up until the last 10 minutes, what is going on in this film? I don't understand it. But you get to the last 10 minutes and everything crystallizes. And ended up being a damn good movie. Really like that one.
Mm-hmm.
And really unique because the actual three guys that it's based on were the three main stars of the film.
That's so right. He got the three dudes to be in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It also has the most realistic fight scene ever filmed.
Yeah, be pretty close to it. The one inside the train. Realistic? Yeah.
Is it more realistic than The Bourne Supremacy?
Yeah, afraid so. Like, slight notch above that. Talking about the Richard Chamberlain version? I don't know.
Yeah.
Boy, is that film forgotten? The one with Richard Chamberlain.
I think it was like a TV movie. That's probably why.
Yeah.
I noticed TV movies, unless Kino Lorber put them out on like Blu-ray, they're completely forgotten.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I just got the UFO. I should have shown it on Whip Out Your Junk maybe next week. I got the UFO Project. The film with James Earl Jones and Estelle Parsons and UFO Incident, whatever it's called. It's amazing for a TV movie. It really
has it
is.
Got like a commentary by Eddie Trunk at all?
It should.
It's like, you were a fool.
They're my favorite band. I got
Michael Schenker?
Because I like them. They hated me in high school, so I liked UFO.
Yeah.
But
where's Pete Way? He's not in this.
But I noticed, like, Kino Lorber, they'll put out these forgotten TV movies, like that UFO film and Killdozer. And, they put out the Kolchak and the Night Stalker movies, which, of course, everybody knows those, but Killdozer on Blu-ray is kind of blows my mind.
Mm.
Yeah.
Saw that in VHS.
I have friends who were very excited, like Gen X guys who were very excited about Killdozer on Blu-ray.
Speaking
of, it's Clint Walker versus a possessed bulldozer. You can't beat that.
Speaking of that, I saw a film named Striker from 1983. It's a co-American, co-Filipino production with basically nobody in it. And that was put out by Kino Lorber as well. And Mad Max 2 ripoff. And by ripoff, I mean ripoff of Mad Max 2.
I think it stars the biker, the gay biker rapist from Ninth Configuration.
It does. Yeah, Steve Stanford.
Yeah, and it's directed by Sergio Santiago. I'm just remembering.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you said gay biker rapist, I was thinking Ninth Configuration.
Hmm. Yeah,
you were thinking it was a Mickey Rourke role that you had forgotten about.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of those. Do you guys want to go ahead and rate Sidekicks?
Yep. All right. I'll start and I'll give it a 5. It was just a decent pass, not fantastic, but not unenjoyable. It was okay. Had its moments, but it's got some plot holes. You could drive a truck through. Yeah.
John, right. What would you give it?
I would agree with Stu. I'd give it a 5. I think Ladybugs is the Jonathan Brandis movie to beat, which, is him joining a girls' soccer team for his stepfather, his future stepfather, Rodney Dangerfield, who he goes, hey, no showers after the game. All right.
You got long hair? Hey.
Hey, I got an idea. I got to have the winning team. Impress my boss. Yeah, no respect. They actually filmed that just a few miles down the road from where I live.
Yeah.
Like in Cherry Hills and Cherry Creek and different Denver suburbs.
What about you?
Well, I give it a slightly higher rating. I give it a 6, and it's purely for nostalgia.
Yeah.
Because it is like, if it didn't have that like Texas 1992 vibe, which is very specific to me, I'd give it a 5 as well. But it gets a little bit of tilt for that.
Yeah.
Just for my personal experience.
I would say to you, dive into Walker Texas Ranger because you'll really love the scenery on there and bring back some memories for you.
Yeah, that's gonna, because I remember when that show was on, it was like a thing to do if you could get a hookup to go to the set, you know. Like, seriously, like in Dallas, like you know, you'd go, oh, like I'd have a friend, oh, my sister got to like drive her car through this scene in Walker Texas Ranger this week, oh, you know, oh, like I, you know, my dad got the hookup to have me go, and I got to see this guy get shot into a pool, you know, and, you know, like there, you know, every so often you'd have a friend who would get to experience something on the Walker set. It was just, it was a thing in Dallas to do, was to get some hookup to go check out the Walker set.
Like a real litany of guest villains, if you will, like Robert Zadar was in at least one episode, I remember, and it was quite a few people in there rolled up in that show, because it was it's popular.
Lee Majors is a villain in one episode I watched.
Oh yes, right.
Gary
right.
Busey's in one.
Of course.
Oh, by the way, I just remembered the reason I know Sidekicks was somewhat successful, besides looking it up on IMDb, was the screenwriter, the original screenwriter Lou Alar, sued the producers, I believe, for profits after the film had been released and hit home video, which is usually a sign that the writer knows he's owed something, because it did pretty well. So I do remember that story. I'm guessing that was settled.
Yeah, the guy who financed it was Jim McInvale, also known as Mattress Mac. I guess he's like the mattress king.
Oh right.
Houston, you know.
So there's no Sidekicks.
We need more movies financed by stores. Yeah. And less financed by Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, and frankly, I'm a big fan of like regional filmmaking. You know, when movies are made outside of New York and L.A., when they're kind of like Carnival of Souls, okay, like
Legend of Boggy Creek.
Charles B. Pierce is a perfect example of like a regional, like whenever movies are outside of that system, you just get a unique voice in there. You know, you get a unique look. You're going to see stuff you wouldn't see in other movies. You'll get perspectives you wouldn't see. You'll see people you wouldn't see. I think that having more of that is good, you know. But not that Sidekicks is like a super unique movie. It rips off two films and combines it. But the look and locations and all that did go like, I was like, wow, that's Texas 1992 right there.
And also you do get to see David Soul's beautiful wife, Julia Nixon Soul, playing the teacher.
I had teachers who looked like her when I was a kid, and I saw her and I was like, oh, there were teachers I had a crush on as a little kid. Like,
I was always baffled she didn't do more movies. She did Rambo and then she did this, and I can't think of her in anything else. And
because he was beating her up half the time.
That might be why.
Oh, she was in Double Dragon.
Apparently.
She was in Double Dragon with Mark Dacascos.
Well, there you go. It all comes back to Mark Dacascos.
Yeah.
All right.
Apparently, she had an uncredited role in Ready Player One as
Peter. Ah.
Yeah.
So. She was in Amityville, A New Generation.
Oh my gosh, we have to do an Amityville episode one of these days.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Jesus Christ. What to pick? Amityville 2, The Possession.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start. I don't even know how many they've made. I'm baffled.
There are so many Vinegar Syndrome, like Amityville Blu-rays.
MVD's
put out a set. You know, a friend of the show, he's talked about doing an Amityville podcast with his daughter, because she's fascinated by it. But it's like, how the hell would you start that? You know, where do you start?
Very, very funny you mentioned Amityville. Our friends, Hunter, Eddie Medina, and his wife, Colleen, did an episode about the Amityville Horror. And one of the sons, actually in the Amityville Horror, messaged them and was just so nasty. He goes, "You don't know what you're fucking talking about. I'm gonna rape your wife and cut off your fucking hair." He, like, Eddie sent me this. I'm like, "What the fuck is it wrong with this guy?" He just went, "Oh."
Wait, was he in the movies or was he involved in the?
No, he's one of the Lutz kids, Daniel Lutz.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I heard he's like that. Like, he's completely.
If you crazy. Even question anything about what happened, the one that gets him the most is when the window came down to his hands and crushed his hands, and then they came back to normal, and people were calling bullshit on it. He will find you on Facebook and go absolutely off at you. And I said to Eddie, "Man, you got to block this guy. He's just fucked. He's off
his
tree." He
sounds very well adjusted.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to watch that documentary. Watch my Amityville Horror, the documentary about him. Yeah.
And you know what? I've never seen the only Amityville movie I've seen is the crappy Michael Bay remake.
Oh no, that's terrible.
Yeah.
I've seen the original, and I think that's it. I think that's all I've ever seen.
I've seen 1, 2. I saw 3 in 3D because I've got that one in the box set. And I've got Amityville Dollhouse on DVD, which was just absolutely nothing to do with that
and
series.
Didn't Richard Fleischer do one? He did Amityville 3D.
Yeah, I think that was the one, yeah. With a very young Meg Ryan. Actually, not a bad film. It was really nothing to do with Amityville, but the 3D effects are pretty cool. I enjoyed them.
Yeah, this is a horror series. I don't consider the Michael Bay one to be legitimate, no. But yeah, there's like so many of these movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All you got to do is throw Amityville in there and you're guaranteed to get yourself a budget of some sort to make it.
Because it's probably not trademarked. That's probably what it is.
Oh, you can't. Dang. It's a suburb.
It's a town.
So the
town,
one with the one with Julia Nixon, A New Generation, was shot by Wally Pfister, the guy who shot all the Chris Nolan movies, the Batman films.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well.
Hmm. It's almost like saying, you know, Leprechaun. You can make any Leprechaun film because there's no trademark on Leprechaun. But, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm about ready to run, guys. So.
Yeah.
All right.
That'll do it. Before we go, a couple of things. Our Ko-Fi page. Meow. Yep. As the cat said, go down there and... shoot us a donation, help the show out, keep the wheels running on this thing. Shout out to this week's donators. Mr. Chris Poggioli sent us a nice donation. Thank you, sir. And we got another one from Brandon Boyle. So thanks, Brandon. So, yeah, nice of those guys to donate. You can do the same. Go to the link below, whether you're watching on YouTube or the audio version, the link will be there. Yep. And also, personal thing, happy 16th birthday to my son Christian for today. Love you heaps. And that's basically it. Stick around for the Nez for his Rue Britannia section. He's first one post Johnson resignation. So interesting to see what Anthony's got to say.
Scorcher.
New era.
It's a new era. Actually, Anthony said to me, "Do you want me to still keep making these?" I'm like, "Yeah, of course." You know, just because he's gone doesn't mean you got to stop. So, yeah, that's it. Nothing else for us to say. Hunter, you're not here next week for next week's episode. Okay, so it's John and I flying together. What we're going to do, I don't know. We'll sort it out. Maybe we'll do an exercise one, like John looking like he's on the treadmill at the moment.
in the background is my Total Gym, my Chuck Norris official Total Gym.
Ah, there you go.
Got it for free off Craigslist. Sorry, Chuck. But
Jesus.
And so, and we're gonna do Desperate Hours the week after, right?
Yes. Yep. Interesting to revisit that one. Yeah.
Yep.
I actually think it's a lot better than what a lot of people give it, but I've not seen it for about 10 years. But hey, how much was that Blu-ray, by the way? Is it a cheapie?
I can't remember. It's MVD, so I can't remember.
Mill Creek.
That's no, Mill Creek. MVD.
No?
Line. No, it's not Mill Creek.
Okay.
I can't remember how much it was. Elias Koteas is in this. The poor man's Robert De Niro.
Sweet. Yep. And Anthony Hopkins with the most Anthony Hopkins dead blank stare you'll ever see in a film, if that's possible.
Produced by Dino De Laurentiis. So.
And Shawnee Smith as well. Used to like her back then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Excited about this one.
It's good. Good fun.
And I just got that book on Cimino that came out that kind of pushes back against the Final Cut narrative on him.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, I think it's there to kind of correct the record from sort of the self-aggrandizing account in Final Cut that sort of was meant to for the producers to save face on Heaven's Gate.
Does it give you his background as one of the Lost Bergendorf brother?
Yes.
As it should. Yeah. Okay, that'll do us. We've rambled on for damn near 2 hours now. So on that note, sign off, boys.
See you later.
Peace out.
Adios.
And now, it's time for Rue Britannia with your foreign correspondent, the Nez.
In a move that will surprise nobody other than those who still think that Joe Biden talks to real people, rather than dead ones, the Tory leadership election reaches a crescendo with the remaining two candidates involved in a second-rate metaphorical shootout in a hall of mirrors. This despite the 11 previous candidates being not that very early indeed. In the last week alone, one candidate gaslit like a woke, since she is a transgender-supporting woke. One candidate said he supported the BBC licence fee. One candidate pledged to scrap 2,400 remaining EU laws on the statute books, only to be caught lying about it. One candidate tried to be conservative, and Liz Truss did absolutely just nothing at all. As the nation fries eggs on car bonnets in 30 degrees Celsius summer heat, a glass of Pimm's with ice has never been more in place in the summertime. The Tory candidates, less so. Royals. And having been ritually humiliated by the firm during their recent visit to London, the royal family being old hands at the idea of dealing with its enemies, the Markles braced themselves for more public humiliation with the formal publication this week of Tom Bower's biography of the Evita Peron wannabe and her wife. Serialised extracts published so far indicate that if indeed revenge is a dish best served cold, then Her Majesty will eat a stone fucking freezing if need be. Accusations range from Harry's friends warning him about marrying her, quote-unquote fucking nuts, to the Queen being relieved that she stayed away from her husband's funeral last year, scolding and bullying female staffers for defying her WOG CRGT values, quote-unquote I want my fucking trainers, and raging at being invited to be the front woman for Canadian fashion company Reitman's, when all along she wanted to be the front woman for Ralph Lauren. Tom Bower's book, Revenge, is out this week in all good formats. You know what to do. Grief. And more chaos at the BBC as the organisation faces more accusations concerning its output, given allegations of sexual misconduct based around its cop drama London Kills, and specifically lead actor Hugo Spear. The BBC, for once, didn't take long to cancel the show immediately. A hasty move perhaps, though these days there's probably really more misconduct at the BBC than what there actually was in season one of Square Pegs. Also last week, the BBC plunked its arse into another right bowl of racial bother when during its coverage of the Women's European Championships, one of its presenters stared directly into the camera and basically stated that the England women's football team was simply too white and frankly lacked diversity. I wonder if she and the BBC still think that the Portuguese women's football team are simply too brown in exactly the same way. Nice to see the BBC losing at least £120 million in cancelled licence fees all over again. Finally, further notes in passing. Well, that's just it. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, there's just nothing this week. Just absolutely nothing at all. I mean, I could give you a story about a pregnant paramedic who suffered a miscarriage after lifting a 20-stone patient. Or I could give you an update on the guy who left his wife and child for a blind Ukrainian refugee. Oh, I could give you a story about anglers in a local park jumping naked into the lake to cool off. Though really, it's been such a slack week for news. And even though it is actually the silly season, it's just basically not really been silly enough for summer. Frankly, I can only really cry again next week. PAX.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.